Okay, before we begin our topic, I just want to take a moment. I haven't formally welcomed the Kollel guys, the summer Kollel guys, the Resh Kollel, express our community's Hakaras HaTov, our profound gratitude for the Torah learning that you've brought to our community. It is an amazing source of nachas to walk by during the day, and even more so at night, and seeing your chavrusas of all ages and the people who've come out to learn. You're having a tremendous impact through the value of the Torah you do on your own and the Torah that you're sharing with our community. So we really want to thank you tremendously. And an enormous yashar koach to our Rosh Beis Medrash, Rabbi Shabtai, for really single-handedly arranging everything and putting together another extraordinary summer. So your Rosh Kollel, Rabbi Federgren, is so good. I wonder, what am I going to speak to you about in the area of Geilus for our regular afternoon Kollel guys? You should know the summer Kollel is learning in Yanei Geilus. So all the topics in Geirus were chosen. So I chose two, I think, that you're not likely covering. And they are the area of Bishul Akum when it comes to a Geir, and Tfilas Kalim when it comes to a Geir. Am I good?
No, I'm doing it.
You are doing it? Okay, we're good. Okay. Namely, we have a prohibition of Bishul Akum. A non-Jew who cooks for a Jew, the food becomes prohibited, and we'll see possibly the pots themselves become prohibited. So what is the status of a ger, a convert's utensils? Let's assume the convert cooked exclusively kosher in those utensils, but after the conversion, do the utensils need to be kashered? And a second question, if a Jew buys utensils from a non-Jew, there's an acquisition, a transaction, they change hands, the Jew's obligated in Tefillas Kelim next week's parsha, you have to immerse the Kelim in the mikvah. So a non-Jew who converts to Judaism, must they immerse their own Kelim? If there's no transfer of ownership of the utensils, they own it. The only transfer has been in their own identity. Must they be tovel the kelim? Those are the two areas that we're going to go through. So let's begin. Bishul Akum is a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hamad Beis. It's not on your source sheet. There's a Issur D'Rabbanan, a Gzeira D'Rabbanan. The rabbis introduced a prohibition. Three prohibitions: a non-Jew is not allowed to cook for a Jew, a non-Jew is not allowed to bake for a Jew, and if a non-Jew milks a cow, it needs a Jewish supervision. Bishul Akum, Chalav Akum, Pas Akum, the milk and the baking have their own rules and regulations, and we're dealing with the prohibition of Bishul Akum. The rabbis did not prohibit it b'hana, it's not forbidden to benefit from, but they instituted that a non-Jew cooks for a Jew. That means not you're going into the non-Jew's house and the non-Jew's cooking using their questionable ingredients and their treif pots. It means the non-Jew is using kosher pots. The non-Jew is using kosher ingredients. But they have exclusively produced that cooking. It's Bishul Akum. There's a Gzeira D'Rabbanan, a rabbinic prohibition, that a Jew is not allowed to consume. A Jew is not allowed to eat that food. What's the reason for this? It's Machlokas. Rashi in Beitza, and the Rambam holds like this as well in Hilchos Machalos Asurus, says the prohibition is Mishum Chasnas. The prohibition is to prevent assimilation and intermarriage. We know, where does socializing take place? Over breaking bread. People enjoy a meal together. When you enjoy a meal together, you develop an interpersonal relationship, and the interpersonal relationship, the casual relationship, could lead to assimilation, could lead to intermarriage. In fact, Gedolei Yisrael have pointed out the parallel between the lack of observance of these laws in America and the greater and growing assimilation and intermarriage rate. Even when we don't always understand them, there certainly seems to be a correlation. So Rashi and Beya, Daf Tezvav, and the Rambam Machlokes Asurus say the prohibition is Mishum Chasnos. The rabbis saw assimilation. They say, how do we prevent too casual a relationship? We will prevent their breaking bread together. So a non-Jew cooks for a Jew, the food becomes prohibited. We're not getting into the details of Bishul Akum now. To what degree does a Jew participate in the cooking process? The difference between the Ashkenazim and Sfardim, the Bechaber and the Ramah, the different exceptions to the rule, if it's not Olah Shulchan Malachim and it's Nechal Kamoshe Uchai, and so on and so forth. We're not getting into those details right now. Rashi in Avozor Daf Lamed Ches, Rashi on that sugya says, no, that's not the problem. Rashi says, why did the rabbis institute the prohibition of Bishul Akum? Not because they're worried about assimilation, but rather, they're worried. The non-Jew who normally eats non-kosher, who is entitled to eat non-kosher, who habitually cooks non-kosher ingredients, will not be as vigilant or scrupulous in order to preserve and to observe the kosher laws. The non-Jews used to reaching for those non-kosher ingredients, used to mixing meat and milk, used to using their utensils. They're not going to be as accustomed to observing the laws, and therefore, because they're worried, they might come to eat the non-kosher itself. That's the reason. So machlokas rishonim, what exactly is the reason? Is it mishum chasnas, to prevent interpersonal relationships? Is it to prevent coming to eat non-kosher? The Avnei Nezer in his tshuva as a chakira, this is not in your sources, the Avnei Nezer has the following chakira. When the rabbis enacted this gzera, prohibiting the food that was cooked by a non-Jew, did they create a gzera? Shema, they said you can't eat that food because lest you, whatever the two reasons, and it is a gzera that has nothing to do with the food, it has to do with your behavior, your attitude towards the food. Is it a din in the gavra? Do you have a prohibition to eat that food in order to observe whichever of those two reasons? Or no? Once the rabbis instituted a gzera of Bishul Akum, they turned that food into the category of machalas asuros. Now that food is prohibited food. That food is like basar b'chalav. The food is like chazer. The food is like something else which is asr. So is the food intrinsically kosher? They've created a prohibition to eat it, lest you come to assimilate, lest you come to eat non-kosher. Or did they say no? Because they instituted their gzera, they took their gzera so far that they made the food itself in the category of ma'achalas asurus. The Ran, the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, has three nafkaminas between those reasons. I'll give you two of them quickly. What if the non-Jew is cooking in your home? So, or these are nafkaminas, let's say, between the reasons of chasnas, and maybe they'll get mixed up with the food. If the non-Jew is cooking in your home, so you have help at home, you hire a personal chef who uses all your utensils, who uses all your ingredients, they're doing it in your home, you're not breaking bread in a way casually with a neighbor, creating or expanding your interpersonal relationships, so you're not, on the one hand, you're not going to come to eat non-kosher, they're doing it in your home. On the other hand, you have a relationship with them. So that might be a nafkamina. Another nafkamina might be, so that's a nafkamina where you say, the mishum chasnas, you might have a relationship with the person cooking in your home. They might say, you know what, you're such a nice guy. Your son, my daughter, I'd like to introduce them. The fact that you're not worried they might introduce non-kosher ingredients will not necessarily prevent you from the socializing. On the other hand, what about a factory? If a non-Jew cooks in a factory for you, where you have no relationship with the person you're buying it from. You go to the supermarket and you buy a product and you have no idea who on the assembly line was responsible for cooking that. So maybe Bishul Akum shouldn't apply in a factory setting because there is no interpersonal relationship, there is no intersection between the consumers of those products and those in the factory who are creating them. The reason of chasnas doesn't apply. So there are several nafkaminas between the two reasons. And the Avnei Nezer has this chakira, whichever the reason, when the Rabbanan enacted their gzera, did they enact it as a prohibition, you can't eat it? Or did they create an isser, a chalos isser on the cheftza of the food, that the food now is in the category of ma'achalos asuros? And what is the possible nafkamina between the chakira of the degree to which the Chachamim instituted the gzera? So here we're in source number one. The Shulchan Aruch in Yerideis and Kuf Yud Gimel, Seif Tez Zayin, says the following. Kalim shebisha b'am ovid kochavim lefanenu, dvorim sheyesh b'am mishum bishulei ovdei kochavim. So a non-Jew, a guy cooks in a kosher pot, kosher ingredients, but they cook food that qualifies, food that's eligible for the prohibition of Bishul Akum. Tzrichim hechsher, says the Shulchan Aruch, this is a machlokas rishonim, but the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, first quotes the opinions that tzarech hechsher kelim, you need to kasher the kelim. That not only is the food prohibited, but if a non-Jew uses the pot to cook for the Jew, and it's food which qualifies as Bishul Akum, then even though the pot's kosher, and even though the ingredients are kosher, Bishul Akum creates a blia, it creates an absorption of a non-kosher taste within the pot, and the pot needs to be kosher. V'yeshomim she'enam tzrichim. And then the Shulchan Aruch quotes a second opinion, that yeshomim, no, you don't have to kosher the pot. The food's prohibited, it's also because of Bishul Akum, but you don't have to kosher the pot. So what are they arguing about? What are the two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch? Amnenezer says it corresponds with these two understandings of the Isser. Is the Isser in the food? Food's intrinsically kosher. You can't eat it for whatever of the two reasons, but the food technically was kosher, so it cannot contaminate your pot. Or do you say, no, once the rabbis prohibited the food, they gave the food a status of machalos asuros, and now, if it's machalos asuros, if it's prohibited food leaves a blia, leaves a absorbed non-kosher taste in our pot, and it needs to be kasher. V'afal divrei ha-matzricham hechshem u'klicheres magilo shalosh pamim v'dayo, v'nei she'en le'eser zeh ikara b'doraisa. But says the Mechaber, even those who say you need to kasher the pot, that it has the status of machalos asuros, if it's a klicheres, if it's an earthenware vessel, which normally we pass and it absorbs taste, but it doesn't purge it, you can't kasher kli cheres. Because this is an issa derabanan, we allow you to do hagalah three times on the kli, and it's an exception to the rule. The Chacham Tzvi applies the three hagalah rule to family heirlooms, antiques, super expensive china. Even though normally we don't pass and we don't kasher a kli cheres, is the famous tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi that there are exceptions to that rule too, and the Hagala three times comes from here, the Mechaber, that because it's not an Issa D'oraisa, this din of Bishalakim, therefore even on a Kli Cheres, you could do it three times. Comes along the Rama and adds on, Ovid Kochavim, Shabisha L'chola B'Shabbos, Mutter L'motzei Shabbos, Afil L'bari, Ve'em B'mishim B'shulei Ovdei Kochavim. If a non-Jew cooks for a Jew on Shabbos, a Jew is a chola who needs hot food on Shabbos, of course, the Jew can't cook for their fellow Jew unless it's a life-threatening illness. So the non-Jew cooks for the Jew. So, okay, from the laws of Shabbos, the non-Jew is entitled to cook for the Jew. But what's left with the pot on Motzei Shabbos, says the Rama? Midinei Shabbos, he had a hat there because they were a chola. But what about the fact that the non-Jew has cooked for the Jew? So says the Rama, it's not a problem. That the law of Bishul Akum would not apply in this circumstance. And there's a discussion in Halacha, which we won't get into now, when a person has a home health aide, when someone is debilitated and they're unable to cook for themselves, they have home health care, and the non-Jewish aide cooks for them, are the rules of Bishul Akum the same? Are the rules of Bishul Akum relaxed in, say, an assisted living facility, an old age home? Are they relaxed in a home setting where there is no other, where there is no other choice? What? In a chanami, but if the Jew is in bed on an oxygen tank and they can't light the fire, there's not always that opportunity, right? If the Jew lights the fire, as far as require more, you have to mix the pot or add ingredients, whatever is the out. It doesn't always work. The Shachir makes a comment. Look at the last wide line. Tzrichem hechsher v'nizbash l'ban b'diev v'yeshrov b'tavshil sharet d'bishili of the kachavim b'telem barov. But let's say you have bishul akum in the pot. The non-Jew is cooked in the pot. It has a blia. But if the Jew contributed to it or food the Jew cooked was added to it, you would apply the principle of bittel. This is a machlokas. What bittel you need here? You need bittel barov. Do you need shishim? But the Shach says you would apply the principle of bittel. The Gra here makes a comment. Again, coming back to the question of do you have to kasher the pot? Says the Gra, if the reason is chasnas, if the reason is because maybe the non-Jew has used non-kosher ingredients, so I understand that if a non-Jew cooks in your pot, you have to kasher the pot. Because bishul akum might result in an actual non-kosher taste being absorbed in the pot. But if the prohibition is mishim chasnas, you're not going to marry the blia in your pot. The fact that the non-Jew cooked in your pot, you're not eating that food with him, you're not breaking bread, you're not going to have a casual relationship. The fact that there's a blia, there's an absorbed taste in your pot, the prohibition of mishim chasnas is not going to apply within the pot. So again, you have this question of the kalim. The Gra, the Ritva hold that you don't have to kasher the kalim. The Rashba, the Beis Yosef here, the Shulchan Aruch, says yeshomrim at least that you do have to kasher. That you do have to kasher the pot. So the question now becomes a goy, a ger, somebody who's not Jewish, who cooked in their own pots. Obviously, we're talking about they cooked everything kosher. If they cooked non-kosher ingredients, certainly the pot needs kashering. But what if they cooked and it was not non-kosher, it was kosher ingredients? So they used a kosher pot and they cooked kosher ingredients and now they convert. You'll say, what's the likelihood of that? How could that possibly come up? I'll tell you, it could come up very likely. And I don't think we're going to have time. Maybe we'll do another session about practical geirus. I have the privilege and honor of being involved in the South Florida Regional Beis Din for Geirus, a subsidiary of the Beis Din of America's network of Batei Din. We deal very often with geirim. So for the summer kol learning geirus, I'm happy to go through practical things. But often you have candidates for conversion who, in their process of learning and growing, kasha their kitchen even before their conversion, get all new utensils, begin to practice and put in place observing the laws of kashrus. So it's exactly our scenario. They have a kosher kitchen, with all new and kosher utensils. They're cooking only kosher ingredients and kosher food. And now they complete the gerus. And when the gerus is complete, they want to know, but I'm eating out of the pots that I used when I was not Jewish. Do the pots have the pots absorb non-kosher taste? Do they need Haggalah? Do the pots need to be kosher? So, if you turn the next page, you see the tshuvas of the Lev Aryeh. Who is the Lev Aryeh? Rav Aryeh Leib Grasnas, who was a dayan of the London Beis Din, a big posek, a great Talmud Chacham. He had a lot of correspondence with Rav Moshe Feinstein, Shlomo Zalman, the Minchas Yitzchak, with many others. It was a major posek in London and England, and a correspondence with the Gedolim of the 20th century. And here on the bottom of page 2, he deals exactly with this question. We're going to get to the second half of the shir is, must he tovel his kelim? But one of the questions on the left-hand side, right, he adds an additional layer of the question. Let's say this guy, the non-Jew, is converting on Tuesday. Monday night, he made dinner in his kitchen. Kosher kitchen, kosher utensils, kosher ingredients. There were leftovers from the dinner. They're in the fridge. Tuesday morning, he undergoes his conversion. Tuesday dinner, now that he's Jewish, he holds of leftovers, and he wants to eat the leftovers, serve the leftovers to his family Tuesday night for dinner. Are the leftovers of the food he cooked as a goy kosher as a Jew, or are they prohibited because of Bishul Akum from when he was a goy? So says Rav Grasnas, dying Grasnas, number one, is the food have a problem with Bishul Akum, and number two, have the kelim absorbed the blia of Bishul Akum, which is benosin tam, and must he kasher the kelim? This is the question. Rav Belsky Zatzal addressed this question, and Rav Belsky said that when does Bishul Akum apply? Bishul Akum applies when the non-Jew is cooking for the Jew. So the Jew is prohibited to eat the food that the non-Jew cooked for the Jew when the non-Jew cooked for the Jew. But this ger, when he was a goy, when he was non-Jewish and he was cooking for himself, he did nothing wrong because he was a non-Jew cooking for a non-Jew. Since he did nothing wrong as a non-Jew cooking for a non-Jew, the food itself intrinsically does not change its status, does not become a din of ma'achalas asuros. And therefore, if Belsky felt there is no bli of Bishul Akum, there's no problem, and the kelim do not need to be kashered. Rav Shechter also, Yibad al-Chaim Tov Ma'aruchim, Rav Shechter holds that the convert does not need to kasher the kelim. There's no problem with Bishul Akum. But let's look at the Lev Aryeh. Says Dayan Grosnos, the brackets on page 3, the end of this tshuva. Ubahadin is tapaknu im tzarech lahagyo kelim shabishol behem kodem shen izgayer, v'mutal lalacha atav shal shabishol kodem shen izgayer, l'chori yesh l'tzadid kevin d'chol atam mishim chasnos, v'hacha ben izgayer lo shayach zeh. The whole reason Bishul Akum is prohibited is because you may come to casually develop a relationship, you might come to develop an interpersonal relationship which could lead to intermarriage. Here, you're not going to intermarry with yourself. You're going to eat the food that you cooked as a non-Jew. You're going to use the utensils that you cooked with as a non-Jew. What's the worry? That you're going to have a relationship with yourself and you may come to marry yourself? This the reason of Mishim Chasnus wouldn't apply. So even the no saint tam, the normative reason about why you have to kasher the kli is because the issue was beno saint tam, but the no saint tam carries the problem of the original food, which was chasnas. Here, the problem of chasnas doesn't apply to the original food. You can't intermarry yourself. You can't even marry yourself, let alone intermarry yourself. And if that was the problem of the original food, that's the problem of the no saint tam, so it wouldn't apply to either. So if you analyze the situation from the position of the prohibition being because of chasnas, because of intermarriage, then it should not be a problem. So says the Lev Aryeh, rejecting that distinction, says, yeah, if the whole problem is chasnas, maybe it shouldn't apply to a bliya. But maybe you say, lo plug, that if, again, going back to the Avnei Nezis Chakira, if the issue is the Isser, don't eat food that's Bishul Akum because you might come to intermarry, so you can't eat it. But if you say, no, it created not just an Isser, it created a Cheftza of Isser, it created a Machalas Asuros, so now Lo Plug, Machalas Asuros is Machalas Asuros, and therefore it will remain in force. So I, when I saw Rebelsky's opinion, had this exact same question. Rebelsky said the non-Jew did nothing wrong. When is there an Isser Bishalakim that creates a chalos ma'achalos asuros? When a non-Jew cooks for a Jew. Here, this non-Jew was cooking for himself. He was a non-Jew cooking for a non-Jew. So even when he becomes a Jew, the food is not ma'achalos asuros. Says Rebelsky, he can still eat the food and he doesn't need to kasher the kli. But comes along, Dayan Grosnas, and says, but how could you say that? When he was a non-Jew, he didn't just cook the food for himself. He was a non-Jew who cooked food, and that food was prohibited to another Jew. Forget that he was a candidate to become a Jew. If his neighbor, if his mentor, if those who've been having him through the conversion process came over for dinner, they would not be able to eat that food because it carried the prohibition of Bishul Akum. So even though for himself he did nothing wrong, Legabe other Yisraelim is an Isser of Bishul Akum, and if you hold the tzad of the Chakira, that it becomes Ma'achalos Asuros, it became Ma'achalos Asuros, even for him after he converts, and certainly within the walls of the Kli, and therefore it needs to be kasher. Gershon is guy or Kekot and Shinol Adami. Correct, but here's the issue again. What a guy did the day before, but that guy no longer exists. You can't intermarry him.
I'm not talking about intermarry.
I understand, but if the reason for the prohibition is Mishum Chasnas, so then the poskim debate that the Chasnas issue is not one in force here.
What is the issue of Bishul Akum? Just an aloha from Moshe Sinai?
No, that's the Machlokas. Two opinions in Rashi. It's not aloha Moshe Sinai. It's an issa derabanan. And that's what we said. It's a machlokas, the Rambam and Rashi, or Rashi and Beya and Rashi and Avodah Zarah. Is it a problem of intermarriage? Is it a problem you might come to eat non-kosher? Whichever way, when they instituted the Gzeira, did they mean to make it machalas asuros, which fits more with the second reason, you might come to eat non-kosher? Or did they say, no, it's not machalas asuros, it's just prohibited for you to be able to eat.
Tomorrow he's going to convert.
Yeah.
He's not going to, today, as a god, an orthodox god, use non-kosher ingredients.
Okay, but now you're starting to get into the non-Jew in your home also is not going to use non-kosher ingredients. I understand. Yeah, Jonathan. What? How does the Avnei Nezer end up? He's explaining both sides. No.
So Belsky's chiddush is only if the guy when he cooks has to dafka have in mind that he's cooking for a Jew?
It's not that he has to have in mind, correct, because you say, let's say a non-Jew cooks for himself, let's say a vegan non-Jew who's using all kosher ingredients in a kosher setting, intends to cook for himself, the Isser will apply to the Jew later, right? Rebelsky, I think, is just saying, vis-a-vis yourself, you can't create an Isser for yourself. You have another more fundamental problem, which is that in order for a conversion candidate to qualify for conversion, they have to be knowledgeable and observing all the laws we're going to teach them. So what do they eat during the whole conversion process? Everything they cook for themselves. There's a rabbinic, in other words, how do you practice observing the halacha? Included within halacha is the din of Bishul Akum. So do we say they can only buy takeout from Jewish restaurants? Well, what's, obviously not. So Rebelsky is expanding that just like you can't create the Isser for yourself in the process of practice, so even after the fact, you can't create the Isser for yourself. There's a Sefer Shulchan Malachim, which is a play on one of the rules of Bishul Akum. It's a compendium of the laws of Bishul Akum by Rabbi Binyamin Bar Shalom. And here he has in this section exactly this question. Kalim Shebisha Behem Goy Vizgayer. I'm on page 4. It goes from the left to the right here, the two sides. So first he quotes the Tshuva Lev Aryeh that we just saw. But if you look where our underline of the left-hand column, now he quotes a Tshuva Avnei Zicharon, a Rabbi Alter Shaul Pepper, Nishala Goisha Godam Kapnusa Ben Yehudim Vachorak Machalong Sherim Visnai Bachom and Hagim Ki Yehudim. A non-Jew grows among the Jewish community, he only eats kosher. And now he wants to convert. What's the status of the food and of his pots? The bottom line is now he's a Jew. He can't have chasnas with himself, and therefore there is no prohibition. So he wants to go one step further. He wants to say not only is the food that he cooked when he was a non-Jew permissible to himself, but retroactively after the conversion, that food becomes permissible for other Jews. Because again, what was the problem if you eat his food? If you eat his food, you might come to know him. Now there's no problem in knowing him. So he goes so far as to say that not only the food that he cooked when he was a non-Jew, and not only the kalim that he cooked with when he was a non-Jew become permissible to him, they become permissible to every Yisrael, because the whole prohibition to the Yisrael was you might come to have a close and casual relationship, and that is not a problem here, and therefore it becomes permissible for everybody. So says the Shulchan Malachim, we have this machlokas achronim, whether you have to do Haggalah or not. However, the Tshuvas Avnei Zichron adds, Shagam Agir L'tzorach Atma Tzorach L'Haggalas Kelim. He says, no, he still has to kasha. Why? Because maybe when he was a non-Jew, you have the other reason which was given, that maybe non-kosher ingredients were used, and therefore it does have to be kashered. So he ends, and he has daiti, So the Shulchan Malachim paskins that in the end he does have to kasher his kalim, and you should not eat the food, because even the reason about chasnas doesn't apply, but the reason about you might come to eat non kosher still applies. Yes.
As a practical matter, if this kind of question came to you, how would you pask you? Would you go with the
I would go with my Rebbe Rav Schechter.
Okay.
I don't know if I would eat it. I don't know if I'd go so far as this last tshuva. But he can certainly eat his own. Although when you get to the, that's the food itself. When you get to the kalim, right, this convert is now going to invite and reciprocate all the invitations they had when they were in their process. So now can you eat from those kalim? So the psak has implications not only for the ger himself, but for those who are going to eat from his kalim. But there's certainly a lot of room to be made. We're talking about an issa d'rabbanan, talking about a kalim that by the time a Jew eats from them are likely an inim be'yomo. There's a lot of leniencies, but if Schechter holds Meikra Din, and so did Rebelski, that the prohibition of Pishalakim doesn't apply to the Ger, even retroactively. Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg also held that way. Turn to page 5. So the Tshuva's Binyan Ariel, Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, a Dayan in Yerushalayim, the son-in-law of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, was asked this, Mishpachas Geirei Tzedek, Shekanu Kelim Chadash Lefneshe Izgairu, Mizmakin Yasam Shamro HaKashrusom, Ha'im Tzrichin Hil'ad Bilahachshir Esklayim, Midin Balua Shal Geulei Akum. So if you skip down to the last line, the left-hand column, we already find this explicit in the poskim. It's interesting he says that because I searched far and wide and I did not find poskim talk about it. So I don't know why he sees it as so explicit throughout the poskim. But he says, I'll throw in my 2 cents too. And here, Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg adds another compelling argument for why it should not be a problem. Remember the Ramah we saw? The Mechaber quoted 2 opinions. Do you need to do a Hechsher Kalim? It does not require Hechsher Kalim. Is it a din in the Gavra that you can't eat Bishal Akum? Or is it a din in the Chefta? The Chefta has to be treated as Machalas Asuros, and therefore the Kalim need to be kashered. Came along the Raman said, what about a Jew who's sick on Shabbos and a non-Jew who it's permissible to cook for the Jew? So Midine Shabbos, he could eat the food. But what about the Bishal Akum of the Kalim? So it says Rav Zalman Nechemya, quotes the Shulchan Aruch, quotes the Ramah, and then quotes the Mishnah Berurah, the second paragraph. Kosov azeh Mishnah Berurah of Motze Shabbos Mutter Miyav Lo Bino Azeh Bechdeshi Yaseh Mashma Shem Motze Shabbos Mutter Lekulam Lachol Min HaTavshil Afilu Sheb Shabbos HaTavshil Ayah Mutter Rak Lecholah V'Asa L'Acherim. Even though on Shabbos proper the non-Jew cooked for the Jew, only the sick Jew is allowed to eat that food. Other Jews have to wait to be able to eat it on on Motzei Shabbos. Vayin shal Mishnah Berurah, kasav magen Avraham Hashem HaRashba, digam mekadero shebisha b'shabbos, asur l'levasha b'mnei shi b'lua midavar asur, v'davka mevasha l'bari, avam mevasha l'chol amutar sakadera. When is there bishal akum? When you cook for a healthy person, then it absorbs the taste and it would need to be kashered. But when you cook for a chole, for the fact that all the food is permissible on Motzei Shabbos, it means that that's only a Shabbos issue. Within the laws of Shabbos, we have a concept called Maisa Shabbos, that a non-Jew does something for a Jew on Shabbos, one cannot benefit from that which was done. Or a Jew does something for themselves on Shabbos, violating Shabbos, that cannot be benefited from on Shabbos. For themselves, for the person who did it, they can't benefit from it ever. For others, b'chdei sheyaseh, if you wait the amount of time it would take to do it on Motzei Shabbos, then you can benefit from it on Motzei Shabbos. So says Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, that deals with the Hilchos Shabbos aspect. That deals with the Maisa Shabbos component. But what about the Bishal Akum component? The fact that the non-Jew cooked for the Jew, doesn't that contaminate the kalim? Doesn't that contaminate the food with the prohibition of Bishal Akum? So hayo ben idon shel fanenu bizman sheyigoyim ha'ochal yimutu lo'osu mishbacha va'osu la'nashim acherim mishu bishulei akum va'ash nizgayru ein sorach la'achshir. So he likens it to that case and he says, for those who have now converted, because they were entitled to eat from it then, that permission carries forward and therefore the food is not prohibited because of Bishal Akum and the pots need not be kashered. So Rav Belsky, Shechter of Zalman Nechemya are Mekel. The Shulchan Malachim quotes an opinion who wants to be Mekel even for other Jews, but then says one should be Machmir because that's only Mishum Chastas. But Shema Yisarev, maybe they mixed in non-kosher, wouldn't apply. And the Lev Aryeh, Dayan Grosnas is Machmir altogether and says that the Ger would have to kasher everything. It's an enormous tircha, you understand. If this conversion candidate has been kashered their kitchen, using kosher kalim, eating kosher ingredients, and now you're going to tell them after the geirus, take everything, you got to kasher everything top to bottom, it's an enormous tircha. Which gets to another area of Hilchos Geirus, Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says, when there's a machlokas in the areas of Hilchos Geirus, if you cover this, Rav Moshe has a tshuva that we should be nota lahakel. We should look for leniencies, part of this mitzvah, the most often repeated mitzvah in the Torah, v'yahavta misager, that one should look for leniencies in our halachic attitude towards when there are legitimate differing in opinions. So should we obligate the gerim in this tircha of kashering their entire... Okay, to throw out the food, the leftovers from last night, it's not the biggest tircha in the world. But to have to kasher your entire kitchen, re-kasher your entire kitchen, is a big deal. So that would be part of the equation. Again, our Beis Din tells the sponsoring rabbi to paskin for their own candidate. But for our own candidates, we would follow the opinion of Rav Shechter, Rav Belsky, and not require them to re-kasher their kalim. Okay, all of that is part number one. Part number two, which is similar but different. What about Tevilas Kalim? Next week's parasha, we have the war with Midian, the Jewish people triumph, and we acquire the kalim of Midian. And the Torah delineates how you do Hagalah, how you do Libun, and that which has to go into water must go into water is the origin of Tevilas Kalim. For the Rambam, it's only an Esmachta. The Rambam holds Tevilas Kalim is only Derabanan. But most Rishonim, and we Paskin this way, the Tevilas Kalim is De'oraisa for metal utensils. For glass utensils, it's Derabanan, but similarly obligated. You make a bracha on Tevilas Kalim, both for metal or for glass. Even though for metal it's De'oraisa, for glass it's Derabanan. For the Rambam, everything is Derabanan. What's the reason of this mitzvah of Tevilas Kalim? Why do our Kalim have to go to the mikvah? So the Beis Yosef and the Taz quotes this as well, holds that just as an individual goes into the mikvah in order to purify themselves, the utensil of the non-Jew has a tumah, and just like the person goes through conversion by going through the mikvah, utensils similarly go through conversion by going in the mikvah. So a utensil that was owned by a non-Jew was a non-Jewish utensil. When you immerse it in the mikvah, the utensil has undergone a conversion, now it's a Jewish utensil. The Rush says, I'm not buying it. The Rush says it's a chok. It's a chok, Tevilas Kalim is a chok. Why these utensils should have to go to the mikvah, I'm not exactly sure. So again, the question is, when does a utensil have to go to the mikvah? When a Jew acquires a utensil from a non-Jew, whether it's a gift, whether it's a purchase, when a Jew acquires a utensil from a non-Jew, it requires immersion in the mikvah. If the utensil remains the non-Jew's, it does not need to go to the mikvah. So a Jew who borrows a utensil from a non-Jew, it does not require Tevilas Kalim. Or if you give a kli to a non-Jew to fix, even though we paskin uman kona b'shvach kli, that the craftsman acquires the improvement they've made to the utensil. So you might think the goy owns a piece of the utensil. When it comes back to the Jew, they need tefillas kelim. We say no, it does not require tefillas kelim. It's only when there is a complete transaction from the non-Jew to the Jew. So for example, when it comes to chametz, we're always careful to tell people, remind people. On the form, not only are you selling your chametz, you're selling the chametz balua and kelim, the chametz you may have that is absorbed within utensils. That's why we list where all chametz tikka kelim are in the kitchen. But we're careful to make sure people don't think that you're selling your actual kelim. Because if you'd sell your kelim to a non-Jew, when I buy back the chametz from Theo, everyone on Montoya Circle would have to now, the kelim mikvah would get a lot of donations, but there'd be a line out the door, you'd have to tova your kelim once again. So we only sell the bliya in the, what that means to sell a bliya of chametz in a pot for another time, we only sell the bliya, we don't sell the chametz itself. That's why, what do you do when you have kelim that it's hard to do tefillah? I get a question, I don't know, once a week, every other week. You know, Rabbi, I bought a new hot water urn, I bought a new sandwich maker, I bought a new blender, I bought a new, whatever, dough maker, what are those called? Bread maker. What do I do about tefillas kelim? Anything electric. So there are a number of suggestions about what to do about it. One of them that's given, I think the Minchas Yitzchak gives it, is take it apart a little bit and put it back together. Because if the Jew takes it apart and puts it back together, now it became a kli under the Jew. Problem is most Jews, once you take it apart, will not figure out how to put it back together. So anyway, that doesn't help. But there are solutions. We're not getting into tefillas kelim, but we have a din learned from next week's parsha. Again, according to most, a din d'oraisa, according to the Rambam d'Rabbanan, even for those who hold as d'oraisa, for glass it's something which is d'Rabbanan. So, if the law applies when a Jew acquires a kli from a non-Jew, what's the status of the kelim of a non-Jew who becomes a Jew? Do we view them as having acquired kelim? Are they the same kelim they had when they were a non-Jew? Are they as if a new ownership, since they're a new person? Gershon is Gaya Kikot and Shinola Dami? What is the status of a non-Jew who becomes a Jew? If it would be a tircha to have to kasha your kelim, it's equally a tircha to have to load up your car. Those who are married remember the great honeymoon of loading up your car with all of the gifts you got for your wedding and going to the mikvah and having to peel off the sticky stickers and the stickiness that remains afterwards and trying not to drop or break anything and so on. So it's an enormous tircha if you would tell a conversion candidate that after their conversion they have to tovel all their kelim. What's the halacha? So the very first to ask this question is the Chadrei Deya, Rav Yosef Zundel Hutner. His sefer was published in the year 1880. It's on page 6. And he is the first that we have found. He's quoted by all the later poskim, we'll see in a moment, as being the first to raise this question. In Simach Kuf Chaf. He says, Tzarachiyin, Lefi Zedim Ken Gershon Isgayer Yekelav Tzrichim Tfila, V'lo Matzinim Bezeh B'Shem Duchta. We don't find anywhere. It should tell you, it should be instructive that he's the first to ask the question. And even he, who's the first to ask the question, says, we find nowhere in halachic literature the instruction to the ger, mazel tov on your gerus, don't forget to tovel all of your kelim. Maybe the reason why the non-Jew becomes a Jew does not need to is, what does he mean, eno kamaisa shahaya? Which maisa is he talking about? Midyan. Because we'll see the poskim craft the obligation to do tefillas kelim after when we conquered Midyan and when we took their kelim. So since the non-Jew becomes a Jew where the kelim never really exchange hands, his status, his identity is transformed. But from an ownership perspective, they never really change hands. So maybe that's not Dumya de Midyan. That's not at all similar to the case of Midyan. And therefore, you would not need to do tefillas kelim. So he's the first to raise this question, and even he, when he raises it, points out, I don't see anyone who brings it up, and maybe they don't bring it up because it's Davar Pashut, that you don't need tefillas kelim, because this is not at all similar to the case of Midyan.
It seems it would be dependent on what the reason is. So according to the Rashi, it's the chok, so then it wouldn't apply, but if it's going from a Tumah Kedusha or a Hilah Kedusha, then it should apply.
Excellent. So if it's a chok, you could argue it should apply also even if it's a chok, but one can argue it doesn't apply. The chok is when it changes hands, dumya d'midyan, if you acquire something as a Jew from a non-Jew. It's hard to argue, who is this new Jew acquiring the kelim from? Is there someone on the other side? An acquisition, a transaction requires two parties. The Das Makna, the Kona. So, again, if a Jew finds a utensil in the street and chooses to keep it, do they need Tefillas Kelim on it? If your Kona is something from Hefker, does it need Tefillas Kelim? The answer is no. Dumya Demidyan. The whole obligation of Tefillas Kelim is modeled after a Jew acquiring from a non-Jew. If you acquire from Hefker something ownerless, it doesn't require Tefillas Kelim. So who is this new Jew? Who is this Jew by choice, this new Jew? From whom is he acquiring these kelim? There's no transaction that took place. That's not Dumya Demidyan. So maybe if it's a chok issue, but maybe if it's a tumah issue, you would be obligated. The next is Rav Yitzchak Aaron Ettinger, who publishes Tshuvas in 1893, source 7. Look at the bracket at the very end of his Tshuva. He too references this. And he too mentions that we don't find it alluded to. He says, Masharamas La'akshos al arayvet tefilas kli nachrim u minatora v'levanti v'mizusav v'maisa kavanos alishav amaylo hutzrach ha'torah tefilu chalakelim b'shas matan Torah. Why don't we find, everybody knows why you eat milchiks on Shavuos, Rachmal Islan. Why do you have milchiks on Shavuos? Because they didn't have time to kasher the kelim now that they got all the laws. Right, everybody knows that's one of the major reasons for milchiks. Why don't we say because they didn't have time to tova the kelim? They didn't have access to a kelim mikvah, to a body of water. Mikvah Ramayan the Dekatovalin. Ha'emes agid v'loy voshki in any zocher begershin is gayer nemer betur shulchan arash yu kelev tzrichim tefila. He says, I'm not embarrassed to tell you that I don't remember the entire Shulchan Aruch a law that the ger who converts needs to now tova their kelim. V'yaf miyakid v'arav mikom okum kan lo shach lomara sh'yichnesu ha'kelim t'mosam shal akum k'dijosu shal Yisrael t'Yisrael kodim ma'an toru lahir t'meyem chas v'shalom k'par nistavu k'tas mitzvah b'mara v'shir esayam and so on. Even if you say that here you would have to, it wouldn't apply to Har Sinai because there was no Tumas Goyim before there was Tumah. There was no Chalos Tumah. It only began with Matan Torah. So therefore you couldn't say you needed to transfer from Tumah to Tahara. So therefore for sure at Har Sinai we didn't need Tefilas Kelim, even if you want to say that the Ger today does. But he says, and then he asks, in any Zocher, below Evosh, I don't remember, and I'm not embarrassed, the Shulchan Aruch ever making mention of it. So do you have to, or do you not have to?
So the point here is that the Torah should have told us about Tefillas Kelim before but at Matan Torah, as opposed to waiting until Leah. I mean, that's his argument.
The argument he's referencing says that. That may be correct. The omission of the Torah telling us Tefillas Kelim is one of the... why does it wait till Midyan if it's one of the dinim earlier? The Shem Yishmuel, Sochachover Rebbe, quotes his father, the Avnei Nezer. It's not in your source sheet, but all the later poskim in the source sheet make reference to the Shem Yishmuel. The Avnei Nezer says, you know why the Ger need not tova the Kelim? Because they go from Tuma Tahara when he went in the mikvah. Spiritually, they go with him in the mikvah. He doesn't literally pack up all his stuff and bring it to the mikvah when he goes. But when he goes in the mikvah, symbolically his Kelim go with him, and therefore it's not a problem whatsoever. If you skip ahead a little bit, you'll see that Rav Asher Weiss does not like this at all. Rav Asher Weiss on page Minchas Asher on page 12, the left hand side. Chiddush gadol kasa b'shem Hashem Yishmu b'shem Aviv Gadol Avnei Nezer Parshas Matos. The Tefilas Hager Olalo Gam LeKelov. U'Kamasha Kasa of the Gemara Tmura. Behema mu'uberes shenirvao nitrafa, hi uvlada nirvu, hi uvlada nitrafu. So the Avnei Nezer says, if you have an animal that was pregnant, when the animal was violated in an act of bestiality, or become a trefa, the status of the vlad, the status of the fetus, follows the status of the mother. And that's very similar to here, that the guy, when he goes in the mikvah, his kelim go with him. That's what he says there somewhat cryptically, that just like the status of the uber follows the mother, legabe, being violated or becoming a trefa, so too the kelim follow the status of the owner, so when he goes to the mikvah and becomes has kedushas Yisrael, his kelim also gain kedushas Yisrael. Says Rav Asher Weiss, Haridam shenasa behema avalei kenasa gamba uber shemeev uadim etvilas ager. Vadimyon rochuk v'darche apilpul kamuvan lakol. Rav Asher Weiss in his usual harifus even about the Avni Nezer, says the comparison is really off the wall. Okay. As is evident to everybody, the analysis is difficult to explain. I saw somebody else who talks about this Avni Nezer and says, would the Avni Nezer say the same thing about the following situation? We know that the limb of a Jew, if a Jew has to have a limb removed, that limb is metame, carries tumma. It could be metame even ba'ohel. A limb requires kvura. We've had circumstances that a person needs an amputation and they purchase a grave and they already put the amputated limb in the grave, so it'll be with them. We have some notions that in Tchiyas HaMesim, you want to be whole again, it's good to be buried with your limbs. So that limb, let's say until it's buried, also can be metame. So let's say you have a non-Jew who needed a limb amputated. And the limb is sitting in the morgue, the limb is sitting wherever it's sitting, in the hospital. And now the non-Jew has tefillah, the non-Jew becomes a ger. What's the status? When it was the limb of a non-Jew, it was not metame. Does the limb gain the status of the limb of a Jew to be metame? Would the Avnei Nezer go that far? That just like the kelim undergo a conversion with their owner, so do the limbs of the person undergo a conversion with their owner as well? Rabbi Michael Broyd wrote an essay about this topic and he brings this question up. So do the limbs, just like the kelim, would the Avnei Nezer go that far? But Rav Asher Weiss and almost everybody else reject this Avnei Nezer, the Shem Yishmuel. It's a beautiful metaphysical thought that the kelim of a person have the status of their owner. When you go to the mikvah, they go with you. But from a purely halachic analysis, as Rav Asher said, kamuvan lakol, it's very difficult to exactly explain. It's difficult to understand. Rav Shimon Greenfield, Marshag, in source number, on page 8, in his Tshuvos, and written in the year 1919, makes the following argument for why this ger, the convert, would not need tefillas kelim. He too, almost everyone who talks about this says there is a glaring omission until the 19th century. We had a lot of converts before the 19th century. Not as many as we have now, because we were not living among host nations who enabled or promoted or allowed. But we've had a lot of converts before the 19th century. And yet, as everyone points out, it is a glaring omission. So Paskins of Shimon Greenfield, he makes a very compelling argument. He says, when is it you need Dumya Dominion? The law was constructed that when it parallels the acquisition from a non-Jew to a Jew. Here, this convert, he owned the Kalim beforehand. He owns the Kalim now. The fact that he's undergone a transformation in his identity and status to a Kedushas Yisrael doesn't change the ownership. There was no transaction. There's no acquisition. You can't claim it's Dumya Dumidya, and therefore he's exempt. It does not need Tfilas Kalim. However, he says, one should be strict. You could do Tfilas Kalim B'li Bracha. So what happens now if a non-Jew dies, and his son, the convert, inherits the father? So, we have a halacha in a number of areas where when one is destined to inherit someone else, that's not called changing rishus. So maybe too here, he goes so far as to say, the ger who inherits his father, the guy, even those kelim don't need tefillas kelim, because again, the precondition, the prerequisite to tefillas kelim is that there is a change of ownership. If the beneficiary owned partially what he's destined to inherit, that's not called a transaction or transfer of ownership enough to demand tefillas kelim. So maybe he goes so far as to even say the ger who inherits his non-Jewish father wouldn't need tefillas kelim there either. Rav Moshe Sternbach, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, that's a good question. Right, Medina Yerusha, should it apply? The ger is a katan shenola dummy who now doesn't have interpersonal relationships with his family anymore. Would the dinim of Yerusha continue to apply? What did you say, midrabanan it would? Okay, there you go. Well, correct. So again, he leaves this as an open-ended question. Look at Choshen Mishpat Shin and Gimel. Kaimalan Rishus Yorish Lavki Rishus Lokeach Damya. The point is the Rishus Yorish is not like being a Lokeach. And if a prerequisite to the mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim is being like a Lokeach, a Yorish is not like a, assuming that you are a Yorish, at least on a Durabanan, if a Yorish is not like a Lokeach, maybe it doesn't need Tefillas Kelim. He leaves it as a Tzarech Iyim. So that was the question of Matan Torah. That was exactly the comment earlier. That we don't find with Matan Torah that all of a sudden they needed Tefillas Kelim on all the Kelim they owned beforehand. That was one of the arguments for, you see, you don't need it. Rav Shurmach also deals with this question source on page 9 in Shuvas Van Hagos. He quotes much of the literature we've referenced already. And he concludes, Miut Sodek HaPosek Lahat Bilam B'li Bracha Kevin Shalom Atzinu Adin Mefurash Roy Lahat V'Bli Bracha. So the fact that the din doesn't appear could lead you to one of two conclusions. The fact that we don't see it referenced earlier could mean that it's obvious you need Tefillas Kelim, and could mean that it's obvious you don't need Tefillas Kelim. Until now we've seen those who've said the fact that it's not referenced makes it obvious you don't need it. Otherwise, it would have explicitly instructed the ger to do Tefillas Kelim. Here Rav Sternbach says the fact that it's not referenced means it may be obvious you need the Tefillas Kelim, and therefore one should be machmir and do the Tefillas Kelim at least without a bracha. Rav Vosner and the Shevet Alevi, in two places I only brought one, also deals with it. Page 10. Rav Vosner is atzal, the bottom left of page 10. V'duh. Dinistapakti l'nyan gerishin isgayim terach tefillah l'kelev me'ekar adin. Ta'in l'chayotze mitumas goy v'nechnas k'dut shisro gadol mizeh. Odil makevin de'en odumi demayis ashaya she'en kan l'kicha lo tzarach. So Rav Vosner is also weighing exactly our same variables. Do on the one hand you say, what obligates the Kalim in Tefillah? That they're going from Tumah of a Goy to the Kedusha of a Jew. So you have no more an example of that than here, where it was previously owned by a non-Jew and now it's going to a Jew. Or do you say, no, not only do you need that, you need the other factor of Lakicha. You need the Jew to be acquiring it from the non-Jew, and that's what's missing here. Which is the core driver of the mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim, going from Tumah to Tahara, or the component of Lakicha that you need a transaction? In Yusuf Bashad, he says, when looking into it, I found that Tzarech Tadumya Maisa Shaya Eino El Etzim Lakicha Shetzarech Kinyan Deina Kinyan Agorim El Agorim Hudme Ekara Lagamre Bereshus Goy V'Achshu Nitzas Lagamre Lakdushas Yisrael. The main driver of the mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim, says Rav Vosner, is not that there's Lakicha. Dumya Demidyan means it used to have Tumah of a non-Jew, and now it's going to the Kedusha, the Tahara of a Jew. But you don't technically need the formal transaction like in Midyan. So Rav Vosner seems to say that the ger not only needs to tovel his own kelim, but with a bracha. It's not a chumrah. Rav Vosner is so confident that the driver of the mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim is going from Tumah to Tahara, and you don't have that more than you do here, where the non-Jew is becoming a Jew, and therefore Rav Vosner is so strict to say that because you have this transaction, you therefore need Tefillas Kelim with a brach. Next is Rav Asher Weiss, who also deals with this question. And he begins by saying, Shamati mipi Maron of Rabbanon, Rabbi Yoshev, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shevet Alevi, Tshuvas Hanhagos, the Yadvil in Bracha. He says, they all say, he says, I heard, I know, I've done Shemesh, I know as well as anyone, they all say, the ger needs tefillah with a bracha. Omnam, Hargashas Libi, also Kedarkish Bakodesh, says Rav Asher, that my heart tells me, me'azum mikedem hi, dekevan shalom atzono Allah chazub b'divrei harishonim v'aposim l'doroseim, ein l'charayi gedolam yizud, be'emes ein ager tzorach la'at b'lkeilov. The fact that Rav Yashav and Rav Chaim Kanievsky and the Shevet Alevi and Rav Shtermach all say you need it with a bracha, says Rav Asher Weiss, that's nice. But my heart tells me, the fact that it's not in Shulchan Aruch, It's not quoted by the Rishonim, it's not quoted by the Acharonim, means the omission is telling us the halacha. Namely, that the ger does not need tefillas kelim. Where do we have this idea that an omission tells you the halacha? So he quotes the Chazon Ish. Kein ze deshtikas haposkim yachra ha'yisera mikol harayos. The most compelling evidence is when the poskim are silent. When there's poskim have nothing to say, when there's an omission of their talking about it, you can assume that something is permissible. He quotes this tradition from the Chazon Ish. And therefore he says, though all these great poskim say that the ger needs tefillas kelim with a bracha, his heart tells him that it's unnecessary over here. And then he continues, Masha'inkin begirshin is carried in kinyana nifka ide geras vaklilo over mishus lashus, inkan mitzvah tefillah. There is no transaction. The kli is not changing property. It belonged to him before, it belongs to him afterwards. He has changed, but his ownership over the kelim hasn't changed. And how do you know, by the way, ownership hasn't changed? Because if you want to tell me his ownership has changed to the point that he now needs to do tefillas kelim, so some of the poskim say, what's the halacha of a debt? If you borrow money from a non-Jew, you have a chov to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew chooses to convert, do you say, you know, the Jew's got his little bit of knowledge, so he comes along and he says, I heard a shir, a rabbi said, Gershon is gair kekon shenola dummy. That when a non-Jew converts, it's like they're born anew. They have no connection to what came previously. So you, the non-Jew, who I owe $1,000 to, I have a debt. Now that you converted, you're no longer that person I had the debt to. My debt has now been released, relinquished. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Beferish, no. The debt remains in force. So you see a raya that you can undergo a transformation in your status and identity. You gain Kedushas Yisrael. You can become a ger, but that doesn't change your relationship towards your objects. It doesn't change your relationship towards debt. The debt remains in place. The debt remains in force. So similarly, says Rav Asher Weiss, the ger, though he's undergone a transformation in his identity, but his relationship to the kelim, he owned them before. He also owns them afterwards. You only need tefillas kelim when there is a transfer of ownership from a non-Jew to a Jew. He is the same person who owned it before who owns it now. And therefore, says Rav Asher, there is no tefillas kelim. And he ends, V'kach nir ikra lahalacha lani esdaiti, kevin shlamatzina beposkim hakadmonim halacha zu, shtikasam koda damya. However, says the Marshag that we saw, the Laravcha demilsa yatva b'li bracha, mishim kach nir damatva b'li bracha, tovo lo bracha ach mikra, din patru mitvilas kelim. He says, really, the ger does not need to tovo their kelim. You want to fulfill the opinion you do, go tovo them without a bracha. But says Rav Asher Weiss, confidently, in great contradistinction to Rav Yashav, Chaim Kanievsky, Shevet Alevi, Chuvas Van Hagos, he says you do not need. Next argument, page 13. This is the Sefer of Rito Yosef, the current Sephardi Chief Rabbi of Israel, the son of Rav Ovadia Zatzal. He has a Sefer Klolei Hagiur. On page 13 here he says, on top, Samach Gimel, Mikomakum Yeshlachmir Beklim Atechos La Bilam Belibracha, Kevin Shaladas Arrive of Oposkin Tvilas Klim Atechos Midoraisa, of Beklis Chuchash, Tvilas Midorabon, and Shapi Shismocha Svaracha Aronim, Hachron, Tvila Shin and Srichon Tvila. He distinguishes between your metal utensils and your glass ones. The Rambam held it's all Durabon and Tvilas Kalim, but the Rivet in Rov Rishonim, this is the post we paskin, a Tvilas Kalim on metal is Doraisa, Tvilas Kalim on glass is Durabonon. So since it's a suffix, really does the ger need tefillah? On metal, let them tovel it all without a bracha. And on glass, it's not necessary to tovel it. We're mekel on derabbanans. And so therefore, the ger need not tovel all of his glass, but his metal he should tovel. What is the hanachic analysis? So go to the downstairs, go to the basement, where he explains. On the left-hand side, Samach Gimel. Ho av halacha. Rabbachas Gershon is Garik Kikon Shinola Dami. We know the Gemara in Yevamos. Memela Nifka Ba'aluso Me'ala Kalim Shalo. Venasu Kehefker. Varehu Kezocha Mena Hefker. Ve'in Sarach Lidbo Kalev Elodoma Lamaisa Shai. It's a clean Midyan. Wow. Big Chiddush. Says Rav Yitzchak Yosef, even if you want to believe that this Ger is acquiring his Kalim from someone else, from whom is he acquiring it? Not his non-Jewish self. In between, it becomes hefker. Meaning, the new Jew, the new ger, is not acquiring kelim from the old guy. The old guy is no longer. And when the old guy ceases to exist, his kelim become hefker. And when the new ger comes out of the mikvah and takes ownership of the kelim, he's taking ownership of the kelim from hefker, not taking ownership of the kelim from the guy who is no longer. Which, of course, this analysis begs the question we just referenced a moment ago. Let's say while the goy is in the mikvah, someone steals the kelim, goes into his house and takes his kelim. Have they stolen? Is it hefker or does it belong to the person? Right. The challenge with this analysis is that when he goes in the mikvah, the goy ceases to exist, all of his items become hefker, the Jew emerges from the mikvah, now acquires things from hefker, therefore you don't need tefillas kelim. That analysis is lovely, except it means that while he's in the mikvah, if someone steals everything he owns, they're not chayef for gneva. They haven't stolen. They acquired something from hefker. Nevertheless, this is how Rav Yitzchak Yosef Paskins, in his last line, he quotes that Avnei Nezer, Fidivrei Arab, B'shem Yishmu, B'shem Avav Agon, Bal Avnei Nezer, Gishn Iskai Hovot, Tarasa B'tfilav, Gam L'inyan HaKelem Shalom, he's good anyway. Then on the next page in the right-hand column, he quotes his father, Rav Avadya has a long tshuva, Yabi Omer, which I did not include in the source sheets, mostly because it's not an Otzer HaChachma, and because it's enormously sized, and therefore very difficult to copy. But he quotes from his father, L'inyan Alacha Nirashi Yesh Lahachmir B'kli Matecho Shelo L'Adbilam B'lo Bracha M'kevash L'Adai Sarai V'od Poskim T'vilas Kli Matechos D'Oraisa Chiz Chuchash T'vilas M'Dirabonot Shapi Yesh Zimach Hasvaras Ha'achronim, as he said upstairs. Nevertheless, one should be Machmir when it comes to the metal. You could be Mekel on the glass to not require it to have T'vila at all, even without a Bracha. This Svara also appears in the Sefer Geras Kehilchasa, page 15 in the footnote. He quotes a Tshuvas Ateres Moshe. Anyone know who wrote the Ateres Moshe? I couldn't find it. I don't know who wrote the Ateres Moshe, but he had the same Chiddush. The Tchila Kol Nachasav Hefker El Shmiyad La'achar Mikain Zocha Behem. The Mikain Ena Kelim Ba'am Mitumas Akam Utuch Yisrael. The Afsakei Rishus Hefker Va'advarim Tzarch Iyan. The Hechi Tesei Nachadish Hamilso Achad Ta Hagerus Mafkas Abaylas Al Nachasim. Oud Kasav Shom De Efshal Idea Hagerus Atzim and Batla Atumam Bikelav Ayin Sham. This is an enormous Chiddush. The idea that somehow the kelim first go through hefker before they are acquired by the Jew. And lastly, Rav Menashe Cotton Klein, the Mishnah Halachos in the Sefer Geras Kehilchasa has a tshuva in the back. He too weighs in on this issue, and he says, "Kevin dekana bailam gairu b'mila uvitvila gama kelim tzrichim litbol ke'ein tvilas bailam." Right. So he's kind of the opposite argument of the Shem Yishmuel. Just like the owners needed a conversion in the mikvah, so too do the kelim, they too should be converted as well. Rav Shechter Paskins here too, that the ger does not need tefillas kelim, that the not dumya demidyan, there is no transaction taking place. He is the same owner of the kelim even after his conversion, even if his identity has changed, and therefore he does not need the tircha. So gerim love Rav Shechter on today's shir, no bishul akum and no chiyuv of tefillas kelim. Sefer Michtav Shlomo quotes a chumra that if the ger really wants to be strict, he has a very simple way to resolve all of this. Go buy one new kli, one new metal kli, or glass kli for that matter. Take it to the mikvah, which will require you, after you've converted, to make a bracha. And then you can be tovel all your kelim afterwards, so that if you have a suffix, whether it needed it or not, buy a new kli, it's now chayev in a bracha, and that can be chal on all of them as well. So we saw two subjects in Hilchas Geiros today, I think a little bit off the beaten path, probably not on the curriculum for the summer kolo. One is Bishul Akum. What is the status of the food and of the utensils of a non-Jew who becomes a Jew? Does Bishul Akum continue? Based mostly on the Chakir of the Avnei Nezer, did Chazal put in place a Gzeira, which is on the Gavra, you can't eat the food? Or did they put it on the Chefta, it became Machalos Asurus? And Nafkamina, whether the Kli needs to be, whether the Kli needs to be kashered, and even if you hold the Kli needs to be kashered, if the reason is Chasnas, maybe Chasnas doesn't apply to the Ger who can't marry himself. And the argument of Zalman Nechemia Goldberg that it follows the principle of the Chola, that since it was permissible for him as a non-Jew, it remains permissible even after he becomes a Jew. Rav Shechter and Rav Belsky are Mekel in that area, others are Machmir. And the question of Tfilas Kalim, that does the non-Jew become a Jew, is he viewed as reacquiring Kalim, and now they've transferred from a non-Jew to a Jew, so they require Tfilas Kalim, or he's the same owner of the Kalim, even if his status changed, it's not Dumya Demidyan, and therefore it does not require Tfilas Kalim at all.